I saw the strings. Man, I kind of got used to people not seeing shit, Ron said, shaking his head and sitting down across the fire from Jeb, mouth watering as he watched the fat begin to sizzle off the rib meat.
I didn't get your name, Ron said.
Jebediah, but I prefer Jeb. I don't like sounding biblical.
So, what's your story, Jeb?
2 days, 15 hours remaining. So, where are you headed? Jeb asked, carving off slices of Krusker for both of them.
Oh, I'm headed west, I suppose, toward the mountains. I was wondering why there was a stretch of empty land, but it must have been these guys, he said, lifting the rib he was gnawing on to emphasize.
Careful of the raptors there. They took out a group of seven that passed by here a little over a week ago. They're supposed to be stealthy.
Oh, thanks, man. It shouldn't be a problem, though,
Ron said before eyeing Jebediah quizzically.
Got anything to barter?
I've got a couple lenses I might be willing to trade parts of, Jeb said. These, though, he said, patting his cane and magical girl wand. These I want to keep.
I'm going to bring in my gear. Don't freak out.
Okay. Ron's gear came in packs draped across zombified walkers that looked something like Daddy Longlegs. He grabbed the packs off of them and spread the items out on the ground in front of Jeb. Most of it was quality of life stuff. It was fairly obvious that Ron would hold on to the truly powerful stuff for himself, but Jeb spotted another cleaning wand along with a couple water spigots. There were a few rings with decent stat boosts.
Is there a limit to the number of rings you can wear?
2,
Ron said, waggling his fingers. There was a shining ivory and silver ring on his left and right hands.
So these are kind of superfluous for me.
Jeb pointed out the ivory ring of mist +2, the magical girl cleaning wand, a water-producing lens, and a peculiar-looking stiletto knife without any kind of crossguard. Stiletto of piercing. Crafted by a master smith, this eudium-tipped blade rotates violently when pressed down hard, penetrating all but the strongest armor. All this is on my wish list.
What have you got?
Ron asked, leaning forward expectantly. Jeb pulled out the scarab lens and the worm lens, laying them down in front of the necromancer.
Neat, Ron said, looking at the scarab lens. I haven't found any of these yet. Can I test it?
No!
Acorn shouted, attracting their attention. I gave my word not to use it near their home, Jeb said with a shrug. He reached out with mist and pulled one of the discarded scarabs nearby. They're about this big. I figure you could use them to clean the flesh off your zombies, or if you sanded the dots off the face of the front, you could probably summon one huge beetle, kill it, and add it to your group. You can use them for food, too.
Oh, so it's Genesis and not a temporary summon?
Ron asked, looking intrigued. Far as I can tell, I ate some and it didn't vanish or anything.
Neato.
Ron eyed the rotted stick, immediately noticing the worms crawling on it. This one you can test, Jeb said, handing it to him. Jeb got to watch the neon purple power funnel through the necromancer's palm into the stick before beams of white mist shone out of the raw lens in every direction. A fraction of a second later, everyone and everything was covered in worms.
Ah! I got one in my mouth!
Ron said, spitting. The surrounding fairy squealed with joy and began hunting the wiggling worms with enthusiasm, launching a wormy massacre as they dragged them back to their ravenous grubs.
And that's how the worm lens works, Jeb said, chuckling.
He'd hidden his face behind his sleeve and come out relatively unscathed, worm-wise.
Thanks, but no thanks on the worms,
Ron said, eyeing the stick where he dropped it.
I don't really have any use for them.
This, though, Ron said, holding up the scarab bone.
I could trade you the ring or the knife, or the wand and water lens together.
You can't even use that ring, Jeb protested.
Doesn't mean it's not valuable to somebody,
Ron said with a grin. Some body?
Jeb asked, his mind making a sudden connection. What's the going rate on the corpse of a level 35 warrior?
Level 35? I could make a death knight with that!
Ron cleared his throat.
I mean, I could take it or leave it. No big deal.
Ron knew he'd goofed. Jeb didn't even bother concealing his wicked smile. Tell you what, you seem to be very interested in this death knight of yours. How about I give you the body for these items instead? He said, pulling his scarab lens out of the pile. Ron clicked his tongue, scowling.
I want a barter too,
Jessica said, landing 2 feet away from them, descending straight out of the blue sky to slam down beside the two mist users. Ron gave a strangled squawk and tumbled over backwards. His zombies flinched, leaping to their feet and raising their weapons for a moment before sitting back down, their owner processing the assassin's words.
Sure.
Jebediah Trapper, unclassed, level 14, body 10, mist 29 plus 2, nerve 8 plus 3. Chapter 6. Mermaids in lakes are larger than they appear. 2 days, 13 hours remaining until safe zones expire. Jeb cackled, admiring his new ring and especially the stiletto orbiting his head as he practiced his fine control. He wanted to be good enough to perform surgery with his telekinesis before he cut open his cleaning wand, searching for the death and dismemberment they'd promised. He even had a spare in case he messed up the first one, and a supply of infinite water. All for Redbeard's corpse. A damn good deal.
You went garage sailing a lot before the end of the world, didn't you?
Jessica asked as they walked through the forest, aiming for the sirens to the south. My parents used to have money-making competitions during the summer. They used to hand me the stuff they wanted to buy and tell me to make a lowball offer because I was cute. It usually worked. Before I knew it, I got pretty good at haggling.
Yeah, well, I think George's body should belong to me, given that I had to put up with him.
I don't know. He tried to kill me. Jessica scowled at him silently. You really wanted that necklace of adaptation, didn't you?
Did you see the size of those opals?
Jessica demanded. She'd done pretty well for herself at Ron's post-life goods emporium, trading George's magical boss axe and a few minor items for some rings, enchanted armor, and a pair of boots with stylized wings that essentially gave her a double jump, improving her mid-air performance even more. I need better protection myself, Jeb thought, tapping his beaten brigandine. They were finally equal in terms of treasure, but Jessica could take a hit, and he could not, so he felt a little exposed. The goal was for him to solo the boss while Jessica ran crowd control again, and hopefully the accolade would give him a fighting chance of surviving once the safe zones went down. He glanced over at Jessica, bedecked in silent black and mail armor, wearing shielding bracers along with the razor-back sword, the winged boots, and the rings. Yeah, she'll probably survive it.
Hold on,
Jessica said, squinting.
I hear singing. Put in your earplugs.
Rather than listen to see if he could hear it too, like an idiot, Jeb rolled up the stiff pine wax and shoved it in his ears, praying it would come back out. That was a problem for after they survived this, though. Jessica spoke with an expectant look, her voice muffled by the wax. Jeb gave her a thumbs up and they crept forward. After what felt like half an hour of creeping, but was more likely 5 minutes, they came within sight of the lake. Sirens were, for all intents and purposes, tiny little mermaid-looking girls about 4 feet long, singing and playing with each other in groups of three, their torsos just above the water. On the miniature island in the center of the lake were three more human-sized women seemingly lounging around and tanning, their bare breasts pooling up on their chests. I'm not sure I want to kill these women, Jeb thought, a lifetime of don't-hit-girls drilled into him since preschool suddenly flaring up. It might have had something to do with the boobs, or the muffled harmonizing he could faintly hear as well. Jessica must have read the reticence on his face because she unslung her bow from her shoulder, took out an arrow, and fired a shot through the chest of one of the smaller girls. Jeb opened his mouth to protest when the ground shuddered underneath him. A huge creature, twice the size of a horse, reared out of the water with stumpy finned legs and a gaping maw. He could hear its pained roar even through the earplugs. The three little midget mermaids were attached to the thing via a long and partially clear tube with a single thick blood vein the size of his wrist traversing it. Okay, never mind. My concern about their humanity was not necessary. I think I've seen art like that before. Jessica wagged her hand, catching his attention before pointing at the monsters and performing a sweeping motion, as if to say, "After you." Jeb aimed his stiletto at the infuriated creature and sent it shooting out into the lake. The stiletto sank half an inch into the creature's soft skin. Then, when it met bone, the blade collapsed back into the handle, spinning inside an internal groove as it did so, boring a hole like a hand drill. The result was the knife went in one side of the monster and effortlessly out the other, spilling the creature's lifeblood into the lake as it collapsed. And then the fight was on. The sirens seemed to display rudimentary intelligence as they sank under the water, hiding behind flotsam or fallen logs to make themselves hard to hit. In addition to that, their mermaid tops made squeezing motions with their arms, creating little spheres of water floating in front of their chests before they started shooting water at the two of them. And not friendly squirt gun battle levels of water either. There was a hiss and a spray of water as a fine line of H2O tore a chunk of wood out of the tree 6 inches away from his face. Jeb dropped to the ground on reflex, treating it like small arms fire and getting behind something big and thick, in this case one of the oversized trees surrounding the lake. Ranged attacks, huh? Two can play at that game. He pulled out his little mirror from the crate and held it around the edge of the tree. Do you have any idea how hard it is to attack things using a mirror while facing backwards? He thought to himself, directing his floating knife to attack a smaller siren and missing horribly, plunging the blade into the water. Damn it. He pulled it back out and mentally adjusted before attacking again. The extra 3 points of nerve must have helped because he only missed one more time before he adjusted to using the mirror. He began racking in the kills, perched safely behind his tree, while Jessica leapt from trunk to trunk, drawing fire away from him and forcing the creatures to turn to pay attention to her ranged attacks. They didn't seem like they knew where his attacks were coming from, so he kept zooming the stiletto around, boring holes through anglerfish-looking bastard after bastard. You have gained a level! You have gained a level! You are now level 16! The good times didn't last forever, though, as a thick beam of water knocked his darting dagger of death out of his mental grasp, sending it whizzing through the air into the deep forest. Jeb made a mental note of the direction before refocusing on the one who'd shot it. Mama Siren was awake, and she was pissed as hell. Her mermaid hair was writhing over itself in fury, creating frothing water above her main body, which was rumbling under the surface of the water. And yet the lure's faces still looked serene and beckoning, plump lips half-parted, practically aroused. The strange dissonance made Jeb's hair stand on end. If the midget mermaids were attached to things roughly the size of a bull buffalo, how big was the big one? Elephantine? Those thoughts nearly made him miss the creature's next move. A nova of water erupted from the creature and Jeb flinched his hand back to his chest just in time to avoid losing it. Everything in a 100-foot radius around the lake was lopped off at the 3-foot line. His mirror got a bit taken off the corner, his tree was beginning to creak ominously along with thousands of others, and his hair had gotten a much-needed trim. Crap. Jeb was tempted to roll out of the way of the falling tree, but all the trees were falling, and that meant that 1. He would simply be trading one falling tree for another, and 2. If he leapt out now, he would attract the direct attention of Mama Siren. God, I hope I don't get crushed. Jeb burned mist and reached out, grabbing the tree falling above him and guiding it to the best of his ability so it would fall onto some of its thicker branches farther up the tree, leaving him safely ensconced in a pocket of wood. This would do double duty and shelter him from all the other trees falling to the ground. With a cacophonous thunder, all the trees hit each other and the ground, filling the air with the sound of exploding wood as arm-thick branches were sheared away and splinter shrapnel went flying everywhere. This went on for a good 20 seconds as Jeb just tried to cover his face and neck. Once the sound died down, he did a mental spot check. Okay, nothing crushed, broken, or stabbed. Lucky me. There was a jagged branch pressed against his brigandine, but the inner plates had caught the wood and stopped it from becoming a problem. The only problem was, I can't move. Despite his near superhuman strength, there was no chance of him getting out of the pile of trees surrounding him without help, or a lot of time. Shit, how's Jessica doing? He siphoned off a tiny bit of mist and put it into his mirror, lifting it up above the pile of trees he was buried in, then panned it around slowly until his partner came into view. Jessica was not doing so great. Without vertical trees to hop to and from as well as hide behind, she was left in something of a tight spot. All of the Mama Siren's attention was on the assassin, who was doing her best to dodge the creature's wrist-thick beams of water. There was a trickle of blood from a gash on her scalp, likely from falling trees. Her fancy new armor seemed to be none the worse for wear. The double jump boots were definitely helping, as the embroidered wings came to life every now and then, flapping powerfully and allowing her to reverse course in midair to dodge water beams. It was times like this Jeb almost wished he'd gone nerve body. Still, nothing for it but to soldier on. He brought the mirror back to his hand, then grabbed one of his broken spearheads, splitting his mist in two and controlling both of them. He guided the spearhead way off to the side opposite Jessica, then took one of the mermaid tentacles in the back, bringing its water slinging to a halt. The mermaid began gushing crimson into the already bloody lake as Jeb had nicked the main artery. He reversed direction and slammed through another lure before the third one shot the spearhead out of the air, sending it whirling off into the distance. The remaining mermaid looked cautious now, scanning the coastline with sharp eyes. Don't spot me. Don't spot me. With a blast of water, his mirror was torn out of his grip and shattered. Damn. I hope she's not smart enough to calculate the angle. A moment later, beams of water started perforating Jeb's pile of wood. A few of them came dangerously close to tearing pieces of him off, and he tucked every limb in as close as he could. Water started dripping down from every branch above him, soaking his clothes uncomfortably, trickling down to his back. But if discomfort was the worst this thing could do, he'd be happy to... Wait a minute. Is the water level rising? He turned his head slightly and spotted the water slowly cresting above the grass he lay on. Rather than deal with the hiding creature she couldn't see, the boss was simply flooding the entire shoreline, with the intention of literally flushing him out. Except, Jeb was still pinned by the humongous tree over top of him, so he was more likely to drown than get flushed out. That probably works for her too, he thought grimly as he tugged his cleaning wand out. He pulled out his pocket knife and put the blade into the seam of the magical girl wand, slightly clumsy because of the confined space. This is not how I wanted to do this, he thought, popping the two sides of the cleaning wand apart, holding them above the water. Honestly, it looked a lot like the guts of a modern spyglass. It was hollow in the center with a lens at the base that seemed to be made of fantastically rusty iron, while at the far end was a tiny marble the size of Jeb's pinky. It was a little difficult to see what it was made of because it was surrounded by an aura of pure black. Mist filter. Grime. Small. A mist filter that allows the mist that passes through to only affect objects the user perceives as filth or grime. And the other. Annihilation mist lens. Very tiny. Mist that passes through an annihilation lens removes the first thing it touches from existence, making these both useful for industrial and military applications, but also quite dangerous. These rare lenses are found in the mines of seeping death before being sold to businesses and governments to be broken down into safer sizes. It is illegal for a private entity to own an annihilation mist lens larger than tiny. That's what I'm looking for. Oh crap, the water's up to my ears. Rather than touch the thing, Jeb simply removed the grime filter from the casing, then pressed the two halves of the wand back together before he carefully siphoned out as much mist as he could, splitting it into two. "Hope this works," Jeb muttered, carefully seizing one half of the wand with his mist while hovering slightly away from the annihilation lens with the other ball of mist. With a mental flick, he sent the wand and ball of mist up out of the snarl of trees and hurtling toward the boss siren's last known location. He couldn't see the monster, but he'd been harassing these creatures without direct line of sight for a while, so when Jeb felt like the lens was in place above the siren, he took the unspent mist that was hovering close to the lens and shoved it through. He felt the lens shatter as a kind of crackling sensation in his mind. Bang! There was the harsh crack of an implosion, followed by, "You have gained a level! You 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 are now level 20. Congratulations! You have beaten the Siren Mother in a one-on-one duel. Your cunning is beyond reproach. Siren's cunning accolade granted. +5 nerve." Yes. Wait. Why isn't the water stopping? I killed the damn thing. It was supposed to stop. God damn it, I should have gotten that necklace of adaptation, Jeb thought as he took a deep breath, the water reaching up towards his lips. Congratulations, you have reached level 20. Please choose a class. Kinda busy here, Jeb thought as the water rose above his face, sealing him in a silent tomb. Chapter 7 Magical Batman. Jessica. A little projectile hummed from Jeb's hiding place toward the monster, then the three mermaid heads, a good chunk of the water, and the monster therein simply vanished in a 10-foot sphere. Crack. The implosion sounded like a gunshot as the air rushed in to fill the void. A moment later, the siren boss floated to the surface, the oversized body missing the top of its gargantuan skull. "The fuck was that?" Jessica demanded, scanning the ruined coast. No answer. She scanned the shoreline where she expected Jeb to be and noticed the water level was 2 feet above the level of the shore and rising, peeking out from the toppled trees and destroyed brush. Shit. What if he's trapped under a tree? Light step. She dropped her mask to next to nothing with a thought, skipped forward with a flick of her foot, then brought her mask back to full, generating inertia from nothing. She crossed the lake with a single step, then, when her foot hit the ground again, light step. The wind resistance and her foot landing on the tree brought her speed gently down to zero, then she relaxed and allowed her mask to return. The class ability drained her stamina pretty quick, but it was just too useful for her to pass up. "Jeb, are you in there?" Jess asked, peering into the muddy water. "If you're not stuck under a tree, say something." Shit, he's probably under there. Jessica braced herself on another log and heaved up on the topmost tree in the pile, using every ounce of her strength to haul the tree up and throw it into the lake. She felt superhuman, but that didn't mean her strength was limitless, nor did it mean that she could throw around huge objects as she liked. She was still only 130 pounds. She had to carefully brace herself and haul the tree up on her shoulders, balancing it on top of herself as perfectly as possible, because any little shift in weight could send her stumbling forward or backward. One. She threw it into the lake. Two. The water level kept going up, now 4 feet above the shore. Her ankles were getting cold and wet. What the hell happened? Some kind of underground artesian well? Damn it. I hope I'm not crushing him by moving these trees. But between that and drowning, I'll take my chances. It took entirely too long to move each one of the trees, and Jessica wasn't entirely sure she was looking in the right place. "Jeb, if you die after I let you have those boss solo kills, I will drag your ass back out of hell myself and take those accolades back." 8 short and yet horrifyingly long minutes later, the water was beginning to go down again, and Jessica had the last tree exposed. If this isn't where he was hiding, he's probably dead. A man with 10 body might be able to hold his breath this long, or recover from passing out underwater if he couldn't hold his breath. The last tree was the biggest, though, as he'd been sheltering behind the biggest one he could find. It was toppled over, partially sticking out of the bloody lake water, edge resting on its stump.
There's gotta be room under there,
she thought, plopping her feet down into the water, setting her feet on the stump. She squatted down and grabbed the base of the tree, straining mightily as she lifted the massive hunk of wood.
Fuck!
Jessica grunted as she tossed the tree off to one side before peering down into the murky water beneath the tree. She flinched back when a hand erupted out of the drink. Jeb drew himself out of the water, resting his elbow on the stump like someone at a swimming pool. Bartender, can I get another Mai Tai? He didn't even sound out of breath. Jeb's face had an insufferable grin as he pulled himself out of the water.
How are you fine?
Oh, I made a breathing tube out of air held in place with telekinesis. He plunged his hand underwater, then pulled back up what appeared to be a perfect cylinder of water, held in place by his thumb. He let go of the water, and it slid back out, rendering the tube invisible again.
Of course you did.
What was the alternative? Not breathing? That would be dumb. Jeb. Jessica gave him an exasperated headshake and hopped back up onto dry land. And thanks for the help. I would have had to lie there for an hour longer waiting for the water to go back down. And let me tell you, nerve sickness is not a good time to be stuck in a claustrophobic spot. Jessica glanced over at him.
You're welcome.
Ding! Your party has cleared the Southern Lakes dungeon. Please take your rewards. As before, sphincters coalesced out of the ever-present mist and released chests into the lake, where they started bobbing in the water. Jeb couldn't get the image of a big-ass toilet bowl out of his head.
In the lake? Really? I'll handle this,
Jessica said, walking on water over to the chests. Cool ability. Jeb could have just pulled the chests over with his mist, but something else was holding his attention. You may now choose a class. You have met the prerequisites for three classes. Your class grants abilities and stat bonuses. At higher levels, classes grant extra abilities. 50, 100, 250, 500, 1000. Soldier, D. Mystic Trapsmith, B. Telekinetic Combatant, A.
Ooh.
Jeb's eyebrows rose at the last two, which were the two most likely to not be foot-dependent. Telekinetic combatant sounded cool, like exploding people's heads while riding a whirlwind of telekinetic power, or wielding 1,000 swords at once with his mind. But I should check them all, see which one I like the best. He eyed Soldier, and it unfolded for him. Soldier, D. Plus 5 body. You were a soldier in a previous life. Why not this one, too? Passive boost to weapon handling skills. Ability. It's worth more than you are. User may transfer damage from any magical or non-magical gear to themselves, repairing the item in the process. Works with some consumables. Try not to kill yourself.
Hey, that's not as bad as I thought.
I mean, I don't know if anybody would want to take damage to pinch pennies like that, but fixing extremely valuable consumables like the Vivicant Cane might be worth the pain. Next. Mystic Trapsmith, B. You have created a trap with mist, disarmed a mist trap, and created an IED out of a household magic item. Plus 5 mist, plus 5 nerve. Passive bonus to assembling / disassembling magic items. Ability, Mystic Trigger. User may bind a reserve of their mist to an object, creature, or location with a predefined behavior and trigger. The trigger must be in observable condition within 100 feet. The behavior of the mist must be predefined and discrete. It cannot interpret your will or situation. It cannot be instructed to fight an individual, but it can, for example, be instructed to seize an object in a specific location and swing it in a specific way until the mist is consumed. It has no concept of what is going on around it. If there is no item there, it seizes nothing and fails. Observable condition. No thought crimes.
That's pretty cool.
Jeb could already think of two great ways to use that. Nope, make that three, four.
I'll keep an eye on that one.
Next. Telekinetic combatant, A. Telekinetic Mist Corps. You have killed over 10 creatures with telekinesis. You have successfully split your attention between two objects. Plus 5 mist, plus 10 nerve. Passive boost to spatial perception. Ability. Telekinetic combat. Passive. Greatly enhances the user's ability to multitask with telekinesis, allowing many more discrete threads of mist to be in use simultaneously. This ability pays more dividends the more it is practiced with, as it is a percentage increase, not a flat bonus.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
So it is, wielding 1,000 swords with my mind and becoming a whirlwind of death.
I choose Mystic Trapsmith.
Telekinetic combatant was strong, no doubt, but it also felt like a bit of a one-trick pony. Pick things up and stab slash bash people with them. And that was plenty effective. Jeb wasn't debating that. It just didn't seem like brute force was going to get him across the finish line. He'd chosen to dump his stats into mist with that thought in mind, and he was going to continue that path as far as it took him. Jeb's mind tingled from the ability seemingly spreading its roots in his brain, making itself available to him. It was a little mentally draining, but it seemed like the biggest cost was spending mist on it. So, let's see if this works. Jeb siphoned a large amount of mist out of himself and drew it into a tightly condensed ball above the tip of his index finger. Mystic Trigger. When my right thumb goes from being straight to bent while my right index finger is extended and all other fingers are clasped to my palm, the mist will grab the air opposite my finger relative to itself in the form of a narrow spike and push it away from my finger at the highest speed it can manage, following the finger's trajectory. The tightly bound mist compressed down even further and became invisible.
Or, in other words,
Jeff pointed at a nearby log, index finger extended, the other three clasped to his palm. He crooked his thumb. There was a hiss of displaced wind as the hardened air shot forward and put a hole in the tree, burying itself in the ground behind it.
Finger gun!
Great idea number three. And call that a successful proof of concept. If that works, the rest of my ideas are likely to work. It wasn't that he couldn't make the same effect manually. The benefit here was doing all the work in advance, so he could be focusing his attention on manually moving something, like the stiletto, for example, and if someone or something got close, he could finger gun them without having to drop control over his stiletto. And with his Vivigant Cane... Where the hell is my Vivigant Cane? He spent the next couple minutes trying to fish his ivory cane out of the water, until the water level went down far enough to reveal the damn thing had rolled farther out than he'd expected and was halfway stuck under a log. He pried it out carefully, making sure not to break it. Damn thing was probably worth more than he was. By the time he was done hopping through the muck of the ruined lakeshore, Jessica was on her way back with the loot in hand, still Jesusing over the water.
What you got, Jess?
Jeb asked, sitting on a log.
Permanent stat boosting potions, she said, showing him two bottles. Body,
she held up the red one.
Mist. She held up the white one. Which one you want?
Jeb tapped his fingers on the cane, frowning. He needed to get more body sooner or later to keep pace with escalating danger. But whenever he was given a choice...
Mist!
Jessica snorted.
Don't know why I asked,
she said, tossing him the white one. Jeb downed it before he could wallow in his poor decision-making skills, and Jessica did the same. Plus 3 mist. Then he dropped the remaining 6 points from fighting the sirens straight into mist. Nursing a throbbing headache, Jeb pulled out his map and checked what kind of dungeons might be nearby. They didn't have much time left until they would be forced out of the forest. They needed to clean up around here, take a rest in the safe zone, then clear out the north.
Jebediah Trapper. Mystic Trapsmith, level 20. Body, 10. Mist, 43, plus 2.
Nerve, 18 plus 3. Abilities. Mystic Trigger. 2 days, 10 hours remaining.
You take a break, I'll keep watch.
Jeb said, writing on a piece of MRE packaging with a stick of charcoal.
I gotta do some homework anyway.
Jessica grunted and took off her magic boots, wincing at the smell.
There's talc in the survival supplies,
Jeb said, pointing. Alien bastards didn't think a pencil and a pad of paper might come in handy, though. Jeb refocused on his piece of paper and got back to listing his great ideas, TM, for how to use Mystic Trigger. 1. Landmine. 2. Automate the Vivicant Cane. 3. Finger Gun. 4. Shield. 5. Grenades. 6. Projectile Return. 7. Safety Phrases. Jeb tapped the other end of the burnt stick on the paper, but couldn't think of any new ideas off the top of his head. Then he went about defining how they might work. For the landmine, if a creature larger than X, and not him or Jess, steps above the object, then boom. Simple. For the automated Vivicant Cane, he could assign several different triggers to several different reserves of power bound to the cane. Heart rate substantially below resting rate? Trigger the cane. Blood pressure dropping precipitously? Trigger the cane. In addition to the passive triggers that could save his ass when he got blindsided, he could assign active triggers to it, such as simply saying a safety phrase, such as, I'm not wounded, I'm just getting warmed up. Jeb chuckled at the thought of saying something that cringy out loud. Still, it was an observable event. Finger gun, he'd already done. Shield was kind of an extension of the finger gun. Adopt a shielding pose with his arm curled up, shoulder raised, and head tucked in, and a shield of telekinetically stabilized air would spring to life, following his movements. No, I can't follow my movements. It can only spring the shield, then let it hang there. It has no idea where I am, nor the ability to follow me. Still, it provided some interesting utility, and Jeb saw himself using it. Grenades were another simple extension of the concept. He could either take a mist lens or make several dozen telekinetic arrows bound to a single pebble. Throw the pebble and shout, fire in the hole, and boom, people die. Might want a more obscure command trigger. Easily guessed ones could get me killed on accident. Wait, no. If the condition is that I say it, the chances are slim. Projectile return was simple. He could just bind several dozen triggers to himself, and when an object approached above a certain speed on a trajectory to hit him, the closest trigger leaps out and grabs the object, turns it 180 degrees, then returns to sender. Wait. That one might not work. It needs a way of knowing where the projectile is to reach out and grab it. I know. I can have it create a bubble around me, and anything that intersects with the bubble gets spat back. It doesn't need to seek out the projectile specifically. I'll need to create a variety of ranges so they don't interfere with each other. But that's not a big fuss. What had inspired the projectile return was the fact that the people to the north used poison darts. Jeb did not want to get hit by one of those. Let's say anything faster than 90 miles per hour. I'm pretty sure I could dodge anything slower than that, even without the foot. Last but not least, safety phrases. Or, as I like to call them, insurance policies. Tied up? Wink 3 times with your right eye and a blade of telekinetic force will start sawing 2 inches away from your arm, ending flush with the skin. As long as you don't move. Bad guy stole your stuff, have you under guard, and you need a distraction? Say scarabs are scary and spawn a swarm of flesh-eating scarabs.
Oh my god,
Jeb said, resting his forehead in his hand. What is it? Jessica asked, glancing at him.
I just realized. This is the magical Batman class. I have to prepare for every eventuality.
How about the eventuality that I've hidden the last bag of M&Ms?
Jess asked. Jeb deepened his voice to a raspy growl, his face crumpling into a rictus of rage.
Where are they?
Chapter 8. Proof of Concept. 2 days, 4 hours remaining.
Okay, let's double-check my list, Jeb said, taking off his traps.
Finger gun clips. Ack, 10, check. Pip, 10, check. Kip, 10, check. Alpha Strike. Skull and Crossbones. Kane Auto, 4. BP, check. HR, check. BD, check. OD, check.
Kane Manual, 2.
Just Getting Started, check. Alt Blinks, check. Shield, 4. Check. Armor, head, check. Torso, check. Legs, check. Upper arms, check. Lower arms, check. Projectile Reflection, 50. Check.
Safety Phrases. Restraints. 3W. Check.
Scarabs. Check.
Plitzkin. Check.
No Homo. Check.
Room full of Charlie Skull and Crossbones grenades go boom.
Nut. Check. Rock. Check. Knife. Check.
Authorized Magical Girl Transformation. Skull and Crossbones.
Jeb couldn't think of anything more. He was absolutely sure there were more useful things he could add, but he simply wasn't aware of them yet. He leaned forward, staring into the sheet, trying to squeeze more ideas out of his brain.
Anything more?
Come on, you've been ticking around for hours. Let's go!
Jessica cajoled.
Those frog people aren't going to slaughter themselves.
He considered offering a spar just to see how his ideas worked in reality. But the majority of them were designed to be lethal. The rest were single-use defensive, and resetting them would cost him even more time.
I'm just going to have to figure out how they handle in the crucible of combat.
He grabbed the peg leg Jessica had carved while she was waiting and slipped it over his stump, the wood fitting snug all the way up to his knee. Once it was on, he pushed himself to his feet. Foot. It hadn't actually taken her that long to carve. A person with close to 30 body can basically treat hardwood like a soft cheese.
Jeb rolled up his list, written on a mac and cheese package, and tucked it in his pocket before he started clomping after her, using the Vivicant Kane to help keep his balance.
Jeb would, for all the world, look like your average one-legged LARPer, were it not for the broken spearhead and stiletto orbiting him like satellites.
Stab, stab.
Bubbly, Croaker Scout.
Ooh, another human.
Bubbly thought, his animalistic senses picking up two humans trekking through their lands. Humans were remarkably tasty. Each of the ones they caught thus far had been deliciously fatty. Drool threatened to leak out of Bubbly's mouth as he imagined another feast like the one a few nights ago.
No, stay focused,
he thought, swallowing. Humans were getting scarcer, and the ones who remained were by necessity more dangerous than the first ones. He couldn't afford to get complacent.
We'll wait until they get close to a sticky tree, then ambush them.
So it went for a good half hour, Bubbly silently following the blundering mammals through the woods. As he crept along, he gradually picked up more and more Croaker Scouts as he went. The frog people silently sharing looks of knowing anticipation as they shadowed the loud humans. Their skin changed colors to match their hiding spots as they waited patiently for the humans to make a mistake. Finally, it happened. The humans were walking along when a root runner from a sticky tree caught the smaller human on the arm.
Oh no! I got caught on this sticky piece of wood!
Unfortunately, the croakers weren't familiar enough with humans to recognize bad acting.
No, shoot the unhindered one, then we'll swoop in and take them both.
Bubbly drew in a silent breath and raised his blowpipe to his lips, six other croakers following suit. With a quiet puff of air, the deadly poisonous darts trailing bright white feathers streaked through the air, aiming for the bigger human's face and neck. Bubbly thought he saw a flicker in the air, then all the white streaks reversed course. In the blink of an eye, Bubbly was staring at a puff of feather hanging below his right cheek.
What? No!
Bubbly ripped the dart out of his face as quickly as he could, but the rigid paralysis was already setting in.
Jeb, you have gained a level. You are now level 21.
That works a lot better than I thought, Jeb said, dropping the point in mist as Jessica chopped the sticky tree tendril off her arm with a few casual slices of razorback. The frog people were too busy trying and failing to run away to launch another attack, their limbs stiffening into horrifying contortions. The first bubble had triggered and caught three of the projectiles and reversed their course, and the second bubble had caught the remaining four. Jeb had expected to have to spend one use on each projectile, but he was happy to learn that tightly packed projectiles that caught the bubble at the same time would all be returned on the same charge, meaning he had slightly better fuel efficiency than he thought, especially against ambushes. He still had 48 layers left. Make a note to replace those. Man, those frogs dropped quick. I wonder what would have happened if they'd decided to attack Jessica, too.
Sudden realization. That's what I was forgetting, Jeb said, smacking his forehead. Jess, let me put some shields on you, too.
Later.
So you now have a bundle of 10 shots of mist at the tip of your finger, Jeb said. With the keyword pip and then the number, you'll shoot a mind bullet, like so.
Jeb aimed at a nearby tree.
Pip one.
Air hissed as the solidified air was pushed through the nearest tree with a crack. Jessica frowned and pointed her finger at another tree.
Pip one.
Crack. Another hole opened up in another tree. A sinister smile creeped onto Jessica's face. It didn't worry Jeb for himself so much as for all the other schmucks out there.
The trap, Jeb made air quotes, is set only to trigger if you say the keyword. So don't worry about us setting each other's off by accident. You can use the finger bullets at your discretion, but I'd save them for a rainy day if I was you.
And how many shields did you give me? Jessica asked.
12. I've got no way of keeping track of your number in combat, so pay attention to how many you've got left.
Got it. She nodded. Thank you.
Don't thank me yet. I'm giving you these with the tacit understanding that they will help you watch my back better, Jeb said, holding out his hand. Let me reload you.
She put her hand in his, and Jeb tried to ignore the sensation of her skin against his rough hands as he focused on making another pip one bullet on her finger. Even after all that body, her skin felt soft and delicate, her bones small and frail, despite those impressions being demonstrably not true. He drew in mist, increased the size of his core by a minuscule amount, then siphoned off the energy, binding it into a tight little pinhead of energy that would only go off if Jessica Style were to say, Pip one. After that was done, he reloaded his own finger gun, topped off his projectile reflector bubbles, and the two of them sorted through dead frog people. They didn't have much in the way of weapons or treasure on them other than the leather clothes they wore and the blowpipes. They carried about 4 darts apiece, coated in a powerful, oily paralytic, and that was what Jeb was most interested in. Lethal poison darts. I'd rather have one and not need it than need it and not have one. He dumped them all into his biggest pouch, being careful not to touch them with his fingers before sealing the pouch up and hanging it from his belt. Just like that, they made their way to the heart of Croaker territory, stopping every once in a while to lure out the scouts that kept tailing them. There was really no way to tell whether they were being followed by the color-shifting creatures other than to lure them out. Once they got close to their village, the smell of cooking meat and smoke gave it away, along with the near-invisible thread of smoke above the treetops. Let's see, we've counter-ambushed some 28 froggos, so hopefully their numbers are low. He and Jessica dropped low and crawled forward. Jeb was concerned his peg leg might fall off, but the straps held on surprisingly well as they approached, keeping as low as possible. Croakers of every size and coloration were running back and forth in the village, which seemed to house some 200 of the creatures. Some of them were obviously children, and others were either teenagers or female. It was hard to get a read on sex since they didn't have boobs.
They were peacefully chatting, cooking, kicking balls back and forth in the center of the clearing. They could have been a tribe of humans from the Amazon, and it wouldn't have looked any different. Except, yep, that's totally a human ribcage over the fire.
How are we doing this?
Jessica whispered. Shock and awe, Jeb said, reaching into his grenade bag and pulling out something small, heavy, and brown. I'm gonna nut all over these people.
Please stop.
Jeb hauled back and tossed the nut grenade out into the center of the peaceful village of obviously sapient civilians. The nut arced high, tumbling in midair until it dropped about 70 feet in, just inside the first row of houses. Several frog people glanced at it curiously, stepping closer to investigate. Jeb flattened himself to the earth and whispered into the ground, "Nut go boom." There was a thunderous explosion followed by a thrashing sound as telekinetic blades erupted out in every direction, chunking everything and everyone within 50 feet of the grenade. Straw houses collapsed in on themselves. Frog people screamed. And he was back in the hallway, staring down at his own bloodied corpse, crushed to the bed by the collapsed ceiling, blood leaking from his mouth as he desperately tried to breathe.
My chest feels tight. Son of a bitch, something's on top of me,
Jeb thought, straining to take off the armor so he could breathe. It took him at least 30 seconds fumbling with his armor until it was loose enough for him to inhale a good lungful of air.
Jesus, I'm still alive. I'm still alive,
he chanted, trying to convince himself of it. Small parts of him thought that maybe, just maybe, he was lying there dying. And all this craziness he was going through was the last neurons in his brain firing, trying to generate some kind of pattern from the lack of oxygen.
Fuck you, Jacob's letter. As if I didn't have enough reasons to hate that movie anyway.
He envisioned the worming thought as a spike, slowly bursting its way through the ceiling, crushing his rational mind under its weight. Sometimes he didn't feel the spike for months. But doing this? This brought it all back.
You coming?
Jessica asked, frowning down at where he was panting, staring up at the canopy, searching for signs of a collapsed roof while trying to shut out the sounds of screams.
You're real, right?
Jeb asked, glancing over at her.
I'll take that as a maybe,
Jess said, leaping to her feet and diving into the chaos. That alone gave him the impetus he needed to get to his feet. You do not leave your team on their own. That thought brought back the memories, and Jeb looked down at the ugly scar on his hand, where he'd slipped trying to lift the ceiling off of Tyler. He hadn't gotten around to telling the therapist yet, but sometimes that scar was his only lifeline. Proof that he'd survived. That he'd been the lucky one. Jeb snorted. He didn't feel like the lucky one sometimes. On and on we go, he thought, glancing up at the canopy where he could feel certain doom looming. The trees shook their branches comfortingly, sympathy written on their faces. Yeah, I know. Gotta get to work. Jeb walked out into the chaos, clomping forward with his cane, the knife and spear whipping around him like blender blades, puncturing or mauling anyone or anything stupid enough to get close to him. The frog's favorite weapons quickly became their undoing as the first round of warriors committed suicide by reflective bubble. After that, things got a little more dicey. I should use my cane with my left hand, he realized after nearly dropping the ivory stick, trying to hold on to it and shoot someone charging him with a claymore at the same time. The creatures might prefer blow darts, but that didn't mean they didn't have a plethora of alternatives. I wonder if this is a side effect of the surge of humans in the forest. Otherwise, I have no idea where they're getting so much steel. They had a tribal society and hut houses that would fit bush tribesmen, but they were armed to the teeth with steel swords and axes, presumably pilfered from unfortunate dead people. Three more warriors dove out of a nearby hut as he passed by. He pinned two of them to the wall with the penetrator and his trusty spearhead. The last one he pointed a finger at. Pip 6.
The spike of telekinetically hardened air forced itself through the frogman's chest. The creature stumbled a few times, looking down at the gushing hole with unmistakable confusion. Jeb kept clomping along, his two blades pulling themselves out of the frogman and bouncing along beside him. He kept them in nice and tight so he could use them to stop more suicide charges if he had to. He didn't have a technique yet. Nobody had a manual for how to maximize telekinetic combat effectiveness, so he was experimenting. Should I keep one in tight and one roaming? Should I have something defensive like a floating shield? A floating shield with a sharp edge? Well, if that's the case, why not an oversized circular saw blade? It could do both. It was with these kinds of thoughts that he and Jessica tore through the remaining croakers until they came upon the largest hut, practically a mansion by their standards. You have gained a level. You are now level 22. There was a deep, reverberating croaking sound that rattled the walls of the hut. Then there was a bloom of orange light. That was their only warning before a swarm of fireflies burst out of the house, spreading like the wings of a majestic... Oh, crap. Dodge! The fireflies weren't yellow like your typical firefly. These things were fireflies, with big old capital letters. They were glowing a soft orange and looked something like sparks rising from a fire. Except they weren't floating up. They were coming after him, closing in from nearly every direction except straight backwards. Taking discretion as the better part of valor, Jeb flicked his knives backwards, dropped control over them, then telekinetically grabbed his armor and yanked himself backwards, skimming over the muddy center of the village with inhuman speed, barely escaping the swarm engulfing the area he'd just been. Everywhere a firefly touched caught on fire. Dirt, thatched roof, puddle of unidentified liquid. Nothing was off limits. Not interested in those touching me. A frogman waddled out of the hut, but unlike the others, this one was big. He had darker coloration, a huge girth, a mouth that was almost... He looked like a toad. He was wearing what looked like ceremonial leathers and wearing a big old hat. Everybody knows the guy with the biggest hat is in charge. The toad man was carrying a lantern that burned with inner fire. Wait. That's not inner fire. That's fireflies. As he watched, four more fireflies left the lantern and joined the swarm that was even then trying to engulf him again. Okay, what do we have that works against flies? Jeb thought, dragging himself around the village, his feet not even touching the ground, all to stay out of the grasp of the buzzing swarm of fire starters. His bullets weren't big enough. None of his safety words were any good at fighting swarms. Grenades, maybe? He would need some way to focus the blast, to make sure the flies felt the full force of the shock. Yeah, that might work. Jeb dragged himself in a wide circle, allowing the swarm to clump up on itself as it tried to chase him. He dropped control over his armor, staggering to a halt before he siphoned mist out, creating a large dome of telekinetic force around the flies, with a little hole in the front. He fished out his rock grenade and tossed it through the opening only he could perceive. Rock go boom. The deafening sound of the explosive wave of force emanating outward was somewhat muted by the dome of force. He designed the grenades to release a thunderclap of force to generate the awe, whereas the blades generated the shock. In this case, the thunderclap was all that was needed. As the tiny bodies of the fireflies were crushed against the wall with a spray of broken insects pouring out of the hole, setting his armor on fire from their residual heat. Lucky, Jeb thought, suppressing his panic and tugging the last couple straps of his armor off, allowing it to fall away. His eyebrows had seen better days, but he dealt with the... Look out! Jeb glanced over and saw a sparkling bubble heading his direction at high speeds. Rule of thumb. Don't let the other guy touch you with something if you can help it. Jeb dropped to the ground, back splatting in the mud. The scintillating multi-hued bubble rocketed over his head before punching a hole through the hut behind him. But it's a bubble. Jeb scrambled away, watching the toad's neck expand in a very toad-like manner
before he opened his mouth, revealing another bubble. The toad's tongue lashed out, spinning the bubble and sending it careening forward on a U-shaped path like a rising fastball. Jeb rolled to the side, siphoning two new strands of mist out of himself, taking control of his stiletto and his cane. The creature's throat expanded again, and it created another bubble. How many bubbles is this guy gonna make before he's satisfied? He instructed the stiletto to go wide, slipping out of the creature's field of vision, hopefully. Its eyes were a little wide-set. It held up the lantern, and another 5 fireflies flew out, joining the slowly repopulating swarm. Jeb was instructing the knife to sneak up on the creature's ankle when it did something unexpected. The swarm of fireflies flew into the bubble, and it caught fire, burning up in an instant like a bit of flash paper. The fuck? A bright light came from behind him, followed by a searing pain in his right shoulder. Jeb glanced over his shoulder and spotted the fastball bubble hovering above him, an orange glow slowly cooling from it. Somehow, it had transferred the heat from the other bubble to the one above him, scoring a shot on his back. Oh, so that's how it is, huh? Jeb thought, his adrenaline drowning out the pain. Then you won't mind if I do this. When the toad's neck was billowing outward again, Jeb brought the stiletto skimming out from behind the hut closest to the toad man, hugging the ground as much as possible. It managed to avoid detection, striking just as the creature's eyes were rolling back in its head about to barf up another bubble. The stiletto blasted a hole through the creature's ankle, forcing it down onto its knees. Jeb reversed the knife's trajectory, plunging through the shaman's back, then through the top of its skull. The toadman collapsed to the ground with wide eyes and a strangled croak, his firefly scattering and slowly winking out. The odd magical bubble above them wrinkled, deflated, and slumped to the ground beside Jeb. You have gained a level! You have gained a level! You are now level 24. Congratulations! You have beaten the Croaker Shaman Rub-Rub-Rub-You in a one-on-one duel. Your mastery of mist is beyond reproach. Rub-Rub-Rub-You's Mysteries accolade granted. +5 mist. As usual, Jeb dropped his extra points into mist, suffering through a mild headache for his troubles. Jebediah Trapper, Mystic Trapsmith, level 24. Body 10. Mist 52 plus 2, Nerve 18 plus 3. Abilities, Mystic Trigger. How did it go? Jessica asked, landing beside him. My shields can't observe heat or light or mist. I'm not sure what he was using there, Jeb said, pointing at his right shoulder. On the other hand, the fight was actually a lot easier than the other two. Most of that can be directly attributed to my class ability. Jessica stepped behind him and gave a sympathetic hiss. That burn doesn't look great, but you've got superhuman healing, so... Barely, Jeb said with a chuckle, wincing as he headed over to the dead toad shaman. After searing pain in his shoulder every time he moved his right arm, he settled for putting his arm in a makeshift sling.
You gonna use your cane?
She asked. I don't know, how bad is it?
Really red and swollen, she said. Like the worst sunburn ever.
No charred skin? He asked. Jessica shook her head. Then I should be fine. We'll save the cane for life-threatening emergencies. Thankfully, injuries don't impact my combat performance that much.
Says the guy limping along with a cane and a sling.
Jeb chuckled as he knelt beside the shaman, setting down the cane to investigate the lantern. It was one of those box-like ones with an opening glass door in the front and 3 more glass panels topped with a metal ceiling and a brass hoop to hold it by. Lantern of Fireflies. Uncommon. Built by the most legendary Croaker artisans who left their forest homes to study magical designs in Merid cities, this lantern is designed to aid weak mist users by drawing small amounts of the user's mist and converting it into controllable fireflies. Against stronger enemies, this is little more than a gimmick, but it's extremely effective against weaker creatures. Once the lantern is full, it stops drawing mist, waiting to be used. Me likey. Jeb awkwardly tied the lantern to the growing collection of knickknacks on his belt with one hand.
You need some help with that?
Jess asked, raising a brow. No, I'm good.
Jeb said, picking up the cane with his left hand and standing up with a grunt. Between his magical girl wand, sacks of darts, grenades, and lenses, he was starting to take on the appearance of a medieval peddler. Damn Ron and his endless supply of free porters.
Ding! Your party has cleared the Croaker Village. Please take your rewards.
Jeb didn't even flinch away from the sphincters anymore. It was just a fact of life at this point. The mist deposited two chests in the center of the village, which was burning merrily, riddled with frog people corpses. Jessica made it to the chests before him, opening both of them before he could even get to the closest one.
That's petty,
Jeb muttered, clumping along to catch up, his pain and missing foot slowing him down substantially.
What'd we get?
Two bonny potions, she said, frowning.
Not bad.
I get the next boss. You're caught up,
she said, holding both of the potions and eyeing him critically.
More than fair,
Jeb said, to which she tossed him a potion. He caught it in his left hand, letting the cane fall to the ground in the process, nearly losing his balance.
I can't believe you're more dangerous than I am, she said, shaking her head.
That's subjective,
Jeb said before downing the red liquid. It tasted silty.
Doesn't seem like it to me,
Jess replied with a small smile.
Did she just make a joke? I mean, sure, it was a bad one, but still, it's something.
Plus three body.
Oh, man, you drank the potions.
The voice came from the far side of the village, and Jeb glanced over, spotting a group of some 15 humans emerging from the woods.
15, that's a lot.
They were, on average, better equipped than Jeb, but worse off than Jessica. Their armor was a patchwork of different sources, their weapons running the gamut from heavy tree branches to glowing swords.
Can we help you?
Jessica asked, eyes narrowing.
No, no,
the man in the lead said, holding up his hands.
Just those potions are worth a lot in trade.
He was wielding the glowing sword, of course, and his armor was more cohesive than the others. That meant he was probably the toughest they had to offer. Jeb made a note of it. If he had to take someone out of the fight first, that would be the guy.
No one says you've got to fight anybody.
Jeb corrected himself. Still, the newcomer scanned the burning village.
You guys do all of this on your own?
That's right,
Jessica said with a shrug. The man whistled in appreciation.
Look, my name's David,
he said, slowly reaching into his pocket and pulling out a scrap of paper.
We're forming an army to take down the world tortoise. This is where our base is.
He showed them a scrawled image of the forest with an X on it. Jeb oriented on the lake and mountain, estimating their base to be about 20 miles northeast.
We could use every able body,
he said to Jessica, his gaze flickering to Jeb's slung arm and missing leg.
If you guys can beat a mini-boss with just the two of you, you'd be more than welcome.
Jessica glanced at Jeb before looking back at David.
Well, think about it.
Well, don't take too long. The safe zones expire in 2 days,
David said with a shrug.
We're going to make our attempt before then.
Who's in charge? Jeb asked.
Pardon?
Who's running the show?
Jeb asked.
Who's the one pushing you to kill the tortoise in the next 2 days? His name's Freeman, a level 42 phantom brawler,
David said, a huge smile breaking on his face.
Watching him fight makes me glad he's on our side, you know what I mean?
Jeb couldn't really ask any more questions without seeming nosy, but the big smile on the guy's face suggested this Freeman dude wasn't abusive, at least not to David. Jessica glanced at Jeb.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I don't know what good I'll be like this,
Jeb said, wiggling his wounded arm.
But if you got stuff to trade, I'd be willing to stop by your safe zone. Oh, sure, we've got stuff to trade. This husband and wife, Brett and Amanda, took this soldier and healer classes, and together they can restore people or gear back to full in a matter of seconds. They've got a pretty decent stash of stuff as a result.
I'm familiar with the soldier class, Jeb said, nodding.
buy broken gear off people, fix it up, and get healed by the wifey, then trade it for other stuff. Not a bad racket. I'm surprised the fellow didn't get the merchant class, assuming it exists.
That reminds me,
David said, pulling out his sword and brandishing it in front of him. The sword flopped over like a limp dick.
I'm a Swiftblade. I can change the shape of my weapon. What are your classes?
Jessica, I'm a soldier.
Jessica lied with a straight face. Jeb, beggar. Jeb followed suit. I scrounge more treasure than average. With his numerous pouches and stuff hanging off the rope slung around him, he totally fit the picture, too. Jess keeps it in good condition with her soldier ability by sacking health. Jeb offered that to remind Jessica of the soldier class ability if she didn't already know.
I never heard of the beggar class, but I can see how you might have gotten it with that,
David said, nodding at his leg.
Yeah, combat class wasn't in the cards after this, baby,
Jeb said, tapping his cane on the peg supporting him.
Look forward to seeing both of you,
David said, nodding. Then the squad turned and left.
What are you thinking?
Jessica asked him.
I'm thinking we check in on Ron, see if we can't score another boss or two, then do some recon on these people.
And then?
Well, if they're not mustache-twirling villains, we'll probably barter with them a bit before leaving them to die.
Chapter 9. Air Force. One day, 16 hours remaining.
How is this safe?
Jessica demanded as they floated over the vast forest.
All falling or crashing injuries are dependent on inertia. Since you can bring yours to effectively zero, this is perfectly safe for you.
Are you saying we're going to crash?